Welcome to For Manaless Women. I'm your host, Adele Onyango, and this is a space that is committed to nurturing a new generation of shame-free women. Now, in this episode, I'm joined by Zimbabwean musician, mbira player, published poet, and artist, Hope Masike. And this episode is for you who's ever wondered whether you're behind in life, you know, if you've questioned if the life you're building is enough just because it looks a bit different from other women, right? This episode is for you if you're learning to choose yourself instead of waiting to be chosen. And this episode is for you if you're ready to reclaim your body, your creativity, and your voice. Hope, it's such a delight to have you on For Manaless Women. Thank you for making the time. I first watched you live on stage during the Feminist Festival in 2025, end of 2025. And you have such stage presence. Your music is incredible. So it's a dream to have you on here.
Thank you so much for having me, Adele. I'm really excited to be here. I was watching all your other episodes and my, oh my, did I have fun. So I'm really happy to be here.
I'm glad you did. And so maybe we can take it back. Obviously, you're talking to us from Zimbabwe, which is where you're from. And it's so nice to kind of like have this conversation with you because we can start to understand different cultures and almost see similarities as well. So when you were growing up, what did a good woman, quote unquote, a good woman look like in the world around you?
Oh my, I guess a good woman looked like the standard good looking everywhere, a good woman everywhere else on earth. What I remember from my experience would probably be informed by what I was failing to live up to as a young girl, as what's expected of a young girl. And one thing that I had a challenge with when I was growing up was cleanliness. Was that the girl in the family had to look after the spaces so that they are clean all the time. I was a clutterer. But as I grew older, I discovered that all I needed was a studio. I needed space to put all the things that I was collecting and trying to do little movies with. I would say that's what I remember as being something that was challenging for me as something that is expected of a woman. But generally speaking, I really do not remember. I think I was just having fun being a child. I really don't remember what the expectation of a good woman was.
And I think like sometimes I think back to my upbringing. I definitely had the cleanliness issue. The cooking thing as well, when you got of age to be able to like be in charge of making certain dishes, that was a problem for me as well.
I was lucky there because I happened to be a last born in a family of nine. So by the time some of the responsibilities came to me, they would be done already, or people would always think I'm still too young to be doing certain things. I was a bit lucky there. The cooking wasn't a big one for me.
Yeah, but I always remember the aunties who I felt drawn to or like curious about. I remember one of my aunts, Auntie Marie, she would come for specific family occasions. She just wouldn't come for all of them. She used to drive this bright red car. I don't remember there being a husband. I don't remember there being a husband. And she had this huge curls in her like natural African hair and like bright red lipstick. And she always just looked so fancy and full of life. And this woman, and she was never helping in the kitchen.
Oh, when I grow up, I want to be her.
That was my reasoning. I always felt so endeared by her because she looked so different from what I had seen womanhood presented as.
Nah, I don't have those examples.
So were you surrounded with more traditional?
Yeah, when I look at the women that were around me as I was growing up, I would say they were more traditional. Yeah, I'm thinking about
My aunts, my mom, even I'm thinking about my grandma. Yeah, they were pretty traditional.
And so just to get a sense, because like for us, we still have that pressure as young girls in Kenya, as teenagers, and when we get into our 20s, we kind of have this pressure to get married, get the kids. It almost feels like there's more pressure for that sometimes than finding yourself, or even in some areas, there's more pressure for that as opposed to like going to school, getting an education. Everything you're doing is kind of like burning time, because what's most important that's meant to come is the man. So getting married, you're getting married to a man and the kids. Is that pressure, was that pressure there for you? Is that a pressure that culturally you see in Zim?
Oh yeah, I mean we are African after all, aren't we? Although I often wonder, and I often wonder about this even when it comes to, I guess, all other subjects to do with feminism as a movement and even as a study in whichever area. I often wonder where socialization begins and where it ends. Because when we're looking at socialization, it's not just how you were brought up by your parents. We're looking at the entire society, wherever you grew up, the communities there, what you were reading, what movies you were watching, and all of that. So I often wonder where it begins and where it ends. I say this because then in my adulthood, I also wonder where it begins, where it ends, and then where my desires begin and where they end. And I must say, I have a tough time having proper demarcations for this. So when you ask the question and you direct it to socialization, I don't even know if it's socialization. I always wanted to be married and to have children. It wasn't something that I worked on, especially when I was younger. Of course, I was focusing on school, but I wanted it. But I do not know if my wanting it was a natural wanting it or it was the socialization. And I've never really been able to answer that. However, I would also want to say I think I grew up in a family that was a bit different or were in the minority. My father was big on education. If anything, he was ever reminding us that. In Shona, he would say, "Andisi," which meant like I'm not sending you to school to look for boyfriends. So we knew without a doubt that wasn't what we were going to school for. And he was clear; he wanted everyone to have at least a degree. Then you could do whatever you want with your life. So I only started dating at 24. Even though I wanted to get married and have children, it wasn't like at the fore of my life as I was growing up. It was school, getting a healthy education first. So I guess that's also where my challenge comes with the term socialization. I do not expressly remember getting pressure to get married. Instead, I got a lot of pressure to excel academically before starting to think about boyfriends even.
Yeah, I think there is a gray area, isn't it? And like when you kind of check inside and you're wondering, okay, was I told that I must get married? But part of me wants it. And then when you desire it, you wonder, do I desire it? Because I was told this is what I must desire. So I can understand, like, there's a gray area
Exactly.
there, right?
Exactly. I often battle with it. Exactly.
When you get into this relationship, your first relationship when you're 24, is the desire to get married and have kids there? Or are you just kind of feeling your way into your first relationship? And maybe another thing you could speak to is like, the peers around you and your friends, had they already started dating when you guys were younger?
Yes, friends were already dating. I mean, when I was in primary school, there were people in primary school who were already dating. High school, same thing. Others got married while we were still in school. Others fell pregnant. You know, the kind of things that were happening back then and still happening today. But for me, I just never thought about it while I was in school. And then when I started, yeah, I like that you call it dating. It wasn't even, I don't know what even to call it. It was testing the waters for sure, but the very first one, I wouldn't even call it a relationship. I had no idea what I was doing. I knew what I was supposed to do, but as in, I'm supposed to now start dating, but then I didn't even know what it was. So they were very awkward type of relationships, which I think is a disadvantage of also starting these things late in life because they are a part of our lives. If you're going to expect to get married and have children, you should, the sooner you start, of course you shouldn't start way too young, but the sooner you start, the better you start learning about how to do it properly. But anyway, so I started having proper relationships much later, after understanding the terrain and what it meant to be dating, all of that. I must say, it has taken me so long. I've only learned certain things now at my very old age. But yeah, I'm an advocate for young girls and boys starting to date as soon as possible. It can be controlled, but as soon as they are, you know, after the adolescent ages, as soon as naturally they start having feelings for each other, it's okay if they want to date. And then it's controlled and monitored. For me, yeah, it was a deep dive.
I think I agree. As much as I started dating, I guess early, because like 15, 16, I think the
Yeah.
problem that came up with that for me is that this is the first time, and I'm 37 now, this is the first time I can say I've taken a break from being in relationships. Because from when I was 15, 16, it was just like one relationship into another.
You've
I was busy. Making wrong decisions.
busy.
But it's also, and maybe we could talk about that. Like, one thing that has been so important for me to unlearn is that there was, for me, I felt like what I was groomed to think is that I should desire to be chosen by a man, but I was never really spoken to or given the tools to know that I could choose as well. And I could sit and dream what are the things that are desirable to me in a partner. And did you, when you started dating when you were 24, is that something you had control of? Like knowing that you are an active participant in the choosing of a partner. And you can dream of what do you find desirable?
Oh my, what an important what an important question you bring up. And I completely agree with you. We go back to the word socialization. We were socialized to be courted, and for lack of a better word, to be hunted. But not us being proactive and deciding what we want also, and going for what we want when it comes to relationships, which is a big problem, a big disadvantage. Of course, I am also an advocate of men approaching women in the traditional sense. I'm an advocate for that, but the woman should know what they want already, and we shouldn't be too pleased by whether we are chosen or not chosen. Unfortunately, that becomes a very prominent part of our lives in our the formative years of our womanhood. We want to be chosen, which is why in the end you find us women fighting for a man. Honestly, it's because we want to be chosen, but we are not being intentional about who chooses us, you know, about where we are seen by who, which then determines who chooses us. These are things that you only start learning once you've started dating. And if you're lucky, you have the grace to get mature enough to understand how to handle it. If you're not, you could end up with the wrong person. Well, a whole lot of ugly things could happen. But also, hey, The good side is we are who we are today because we went through what we went through, isn't it?
This is it. This is it. When the lesson hit me, I thought, of course I can participate in choose, like I can say no. You can attempt
Exactly.
to choose me and I can say no, thank you. So
Exactly.
when you look at your life now, you are not married, you don't have kids, you're deeply creative. I feel like from your music, there's an expansive spiritual energy also about you. How do you reconcile what your life looks like now as an African woman with, back to the word, what you were socialized to want or what you as hope desired?
The reconciliation for me comes, well, I'm like you said, I'm very spiritual, so I lean towards that a lot and get my guidance from my spirituality. And what I believe is, you know how they say, let's say in the Christian sense, if you have prayed about something and it hasn't happened, it means God is saying no, or not yet, or all in good time. Or 20 years from now, you look back and you'll be like, ah, now I understand why God said no at this point. That's how I like to look at things, because otherwise, you know, that prayer, God grant me the wisdom to know what you can control, what you can't control, and to be at peace with what you can control and what you cannot control. So for me, I am at peace with whatever is in my life, as long as I know I've done the best I can. And then what being at peace does is that then you sit in the space where you are, and all of a sudden you see the beauty of where you are. And that's me there. So I look at myself now. I like saying the one thing in common among all three of us here now is that we all have 24 hours in a day. I have the privilege of doing whatever I want with my 24 hours without having to ask anyone or to run things by anyone or to consider other people directly or immediately in my life. That's a huge gift. And every day when I pray, I give thanks for the gift of time. I have so much time. I have ample time. And then there's also the theory that our wombs are creative sources. So if they are not utilized the way they naturally should have evolved into at a certain age, they get creative with how to use themselves. This is the explanation that some people have for fibroids, things like cysts. So for me, I also find that that womb, which then didn't work for the primary thing it was supposed to work for, conventionally speaking, that creative energy for me has been a huge, huge advantage. And I have managed to channel it otherwise. And I've managed to, if I'm to say in slang, I've managed to make bag with it. I think that's the essence of life. I know it's so cliche when people say, turn your lemons to lemonade. It's so cliche, but it's so true. How I like to look at it is that just make lemonade. Lemonade is sweeter and nicer than lemon, in fact. So just make lemonade. That's how I reconcile all of this. I like where I am because I have rested in the advantages, the positives of where I am. I mean, look, there are struggles. Every human being has particular struggles in their lives. The difference is where our struggles are. So I like where I am. I like the struggles I have where I am. And it's given me room to do so many things. I think that's the best way to look at life.
Oh, I love that. And when you talk about time and just the abundance of choice as well, I think that's what I love. For me, I'm divorced. And so this is like the first time, the last couple of years are the first time I've lived alone. And I'm just like, this thing is so yummy. Like,
Oh yeah, you can cook while you're absolutely naked. Ah, that I could go on and on. The freedom is amazing.
it's like, do other people know about this? Like, And even when you're talking about getting up, you can travel. You can literally say, in June, I'm going to save so that June I am in God knows which country. And
Oh yeah.
no consulting.
No consulting. Even tonight, as long as I have the money and the flight is available, I can be sleeping in a different country, just like that.
I want us to also touch on something that was so interesting for me to stumble across. I think about a year ago we had For Manaless Women movie night, and we had women of different ages, right? Women in their 40s, me in my 30s. We had women in their 20s, and after the movie we kind of just hang out and we're just talking. And a lot of the women in their 20s were feeling like they hadn't achieved certain things in their life, that they felt that by 25, by 28, I should be doing this. I should have this job. I should be driving this car. I should have this man. I should have one kid on the way. Like at all of these societal expectations that they felt they were late. And I remember hearing them speak, and I thought it's so interesting because they're in their 20s speaking that way. There are women in their 30s who are saying the exact same thing. Women in their 40s saying the exact same thing. And I was like, guys, something is not adding up here, you know? And so I wonder, have you ever met people? Because you don't strike me as someone who feels like they're late in life or behind.
Well, I'm happy I don't seem that way to you. That's a good thing. Because I'm carrying myself well. I don't dress in my problems. Speaking to that, the honest truth is one day you feel that way. One day you feel you're late. One day you look at the future and you wonder and wonder and wonder. And then you end up fearing the future because you've gone down that hole. But another day you wake up and you are extremely happy and you feel you're exactly where you are supposed to be. So it's like a zigzag. One day it's good, one day it's not. And that's perfectly okay. In fact, that's my other definition of life. That's exactly what life is, and which is what makes life fun. So all these things that I feel, or let me say both, that I feel are important, and in their time, they're always reminders of something which is important and that I would have to sit down to sit with and resolve. Every time this happens, I take it as something that is necessary in that time. There's something that has triggered it or that is reminding me, whether it's the good or it's the negative. So one day I'm happy, one day I'm not, but all I do is to make sure I benefit from that time, from how I feel in that day. The day I'm celebrating it, why am I celebrating it? I dive deep into it. I am engulfed in it and I suck as much as I can out of it. The day I'm grieving, I also sit with it. I suck as much as I can out of it, learn as much as I can out of it. C'est la vie. Ups and downs.
On this journey that you've been on, and we're talking about freedom, I think a lot of times women may be scared of the options that bring freedom because there's a belief that with that comes loneliness. And so I wondered, like, in your exploring of this free life that you have there been moments where you have felt lonely?
Of course, it goes without saying, of course. But hey, look, there are married people who are lonely in their homes with their spouses. Loneliness is going to happen at some point. And some people are craving just a second alone to have time on their own to read a book, you know. It's all different. Like I said, everyone has their own different type of struggle. They say you cannot eat your cake and have it. If you are going to have the one thing, it's a rule of life. It means you're missing out on the other. It's just a rule of life. So whether you're scared of being lonely, whether you're scared of not having freedom, either way, you're going to have to choose where you want to be. Sometimes it's not by choice, you find yourself there, but you're going to have to live with it. Like I said, c'est la vie, this life, that's what's there. We have this radio personality here who says Jajiri, and Jajiri kind of means that's how it is. That's how it is. If you cannot do anything about it at that time, or even if you're doing something about it at that time, but while you're in it, that's what it is. So understand that you are experiencing that, and the good you are experiencing while you're in that space is because you let go of something else. Or the bad that you're feeling in that time during that space is because something somewhere else is equalizing the equation. That's the universe. That's how it works. So you make your decisions, and sometimes your decisions come through, sometimes they don't. But be a person who knows how to sit well wherever they are, sit well in it, understanding that you are doing your best.
You know, the thing is, like, when you're talking about some people are in marriages and they're lonely, what came to my mind was a moment when I was married and my then partner went out of town for work or a trip, I can't remember. And I was so happy. I remember buying myself some wine. I was just like, oh my God,
Oh.
I'm gonna have the house to myself. This is incredible. So it's true, like when you've made a decision, you're longing for this other thing. And when you make decision B, you're longing for A. You know, there's moments where you'll long for A. So yeah, c'est la vie, as you said. Another thing that's quite interesting, Hope, about you is that your anthologies. I think I have two of your books. And you write horror poetry. You've written erotic poetry. I think the last time you were in Kenya, there was an erotic poetry reading you did with a friend who's been on the show, actually, Abigail
Yes,
Arunga.
Abigail.
Yeah,
Yes.
it's incredible. Let's explore the themes a bit. Before I try and understand what horror poetry is, let's go to the erotic poetry. As the poet yourself, as the African woman writing, when did you realize, or did you realize, that African women are maybe taught to fear or ashamed away from their desires in the context of pleasure?
Oh yes, of course. For starters, there's the thing that I myself had to discover a lot of things on my own because they were just not talked about. In my culture here in Zimbabwe, traditionally, it was supposed to be all properly organized. There were supposed to be women who would have taught me all of this. But then, of course, things like colonization happened and many otherizations, globalization, and all of that. So we don't have those structures anymore. It is very possible for many young women to be growing up without knowing what they should be knowing about their bodies, and then the same for men. And then people are just getting married, and then they're just discovering things while they're married or when they start dating, whichever. Whole disaster, if you ask me. But anyway, there's been a lot of talk. I mean, in a lot of places, of married women saying that they have no idea what an orgasm is, for instance, without us even getting into other deeper things like G spots and all of that, just an orgasm. There's been a lot of talk about that, different fora where women can speak freely and openly. And these are women who have children, so they've been having these eggs and having children, but they don't know an orgasm. So from that, then I knew there was a problem. And then just from knowing that we don't have the aunties that traditionally were supposed to be teaching us about our bodies, and then the uncles on the boy side, many of us don't have them anymore. They've relocated, they're in the diaspora, or they died, or for whatever reasons, many of us do not have that structure anymore. So I wanted my book to speak to that, but in a fun way also, while teaching people important things that could help spruce things up in the bedroom, but in a nice way that is approaching the whole matter from a cultural lens, or at least making it seem so that it could be decent. I'm a respected figure, you know, so it was good to do that. And then after the release of the book, of course, then I discovered a lot more other things. This type of literature is needed, especially homegrown type of literature like this. There's a lot of erotic writings, but if you look in most of our African cultures, well, let me speak to Zimbabwe because that's what I know. We don't have much literature like that. And the interesting thing is when we were in school, we did literature in Shona, my language, and around form four, we would study a poem or two that were in this genre. They were called Zibabonde, which means the poems of the bed. That's the literal translation, poems for the bed. Yeah, and we would study them and would giggle and whatnot and whatnot. But I imagine it was a good way of slowly introducing a necessary thing that had to be taught to us as we grew older, because some things are supposed to be done with our bodies as we grow in preparation for sex, for the female and for the male. So it's not a matter that's supposed to be spoken about only once people are already grown up. Those were some of the things that drove me to write that book.
This is so incredible to even know that this type of poetry, you were learning it in high school.
We were, but now we don't. How sad is that?
Very sad. I honestly, for me, we used to learn Shakespeare, and I thought in primary school that I hated poetry because I just didn't connect with Shakespeare. And then when I changed school systems, and poetry was introduced to me through music, contemporary poetry, and I was like, this thing is actually pretty cool. Why were we learning about some old guy? So it's incredible. I'm going to circle back to your art in a bit, but you've mentioned something that I think we should spend some time on in terms of like your body. So for you as Hope, when did you reclaim your body and almost like sit comfortably in your body as a woman, despite not having the cultural structures, be it your aunties, etc., who would in traditional times guide us? How did you then sit comfortably in your body? Because I feel like when we talk about sex and pleasure, we always, sometimes for Kenyans, I fault us for starting that conversation in chapter five. We immediately go into safe sex, all of these things. And I'm like, but have we created a space where people can sit comfortably in their bodies first? How did you do that?
Well, who says I did that?
I'm giving you props.
I will I will say, you know what? I'm just happy that now in Zimbabwe, so much as the cultural setup is not always available in most families, I like that our educational system now has sex education proper. And besides, like, not just the lesson on reproductive organs that we used to have, but proper sex education and also being taught about abuse. And that's a good thing. I just thought I should mention it. We are not hopeless. There are good things happening also. But learning about your body, this has been quite a journey for me. Why I say who says I have learned, I'm still learning about my body. And I think one of the saddest thing when it comes to us Africans is that most times when you look at colonization, we are looking at the land that was taken. We're talking about reclaiming land. It's a political type of independence we're talking about. But what we lost through the many years of colonization is not just the land. There's so many things that were beautiful that were in our culture that we lost. And I know a lot of thought leaders and researchers are trying to reclaim all of that now. Of course, we will never reclaim all of it, but so much has been lost. So much so that we are having to learn about our bodies like afresh, like there were no women before us. We are having to struggle with things that we really shouldn't be struggling with as if there wasn't any women before us. The wisdom of our grandmothers, great grandmothers, and beyond just kind of got washed away, and we're trying to reclaim it now. Hopefully, we will succeed with, there's still a chance we will succeed with a greater part of it. So for me, I'm still learning about my body. But I would say that it's really pointless. Well, not pointless because you can still have children, as I have said. You can still have sex and have children. But sex with its full benefits is pointless if you do not understand your body to start with. And that's a lot of us women there. Maybe men too. I cannot speak about men because, well, I'm not a man. I don't know their experience. But most probably men too. So like I said, people start discovering their bodies when they get married. And maybe, I don't know, because the biblical way is that they say, do not fornicate. Maybe that's how it was supposed to be. You start learning about your body when you get married. But then it's not realistic in our time. People are getting married much later in life, you know? So it's not that feasible anymore. I don't know if I answer you.
You have, and I'm curious to know in this, in your journey of getting to know your body, know yourself, reclaim, as you've said, what was stolen and disrupted by colonization. How does your art help you with that? I know we've spoken about your poetry, we're about to get to your music, but how does your art help you do that?
Oh, my art is a lifesaver, I tell you. Okay, there's an antidepressant which is given to people who have depression already. But what's the thing that prevents depression? The answer is art. And then I am lucky because I am the maker of that art. So I have it at my disposal. My art has been it's been art as a form of therapy. Poetry and short story writing is like journaling, really. Of course, we base our writing on experiences from other people's lives, but naturally, our experiences also get in there. It's a nice, natural way of journaling. And like I said, then you make money out of it. Ah, imagine. My art has been a very fertile experimental ground. Experimental ground, yeah. And it's been a space for me to try out the forbidden because it's make belief. So you can try out the forbidden and then you see how it's received and all of that. And art keeps your brain healthy. You exercise your brain. It's not just because I play mbira, of course, then I exercise my body physically also, but my mental capacity is always kept in a healthy shape because of my artwork. There is a lot of deep thinking that goes into art. So deep, if you are not careful, it takes you to places where you cannot come back. So my art has been that. It's the safest space I know to go to.
Oh my goodness. And I can just feel the energy while you're talking about it. Like it's art is so healing. And to be able to, it's like magic, hey, to be able to be the creator of art.
Exactly. Like saying, us creatives, there's God on top who created all of us. And then us, we come immediately after. And we are the soundtrack to people's lives. We are the color to people's lives. We come directly after. And then the rest of mankind.
You've talked about playing the mbira. This is a traditional Zimbabwean instrument that traditionally women were discouraged from playing, right? So how did you start to pick it up? And was it an act of rebellion? Is that how you started?
Oh, I wish. By the time I was born, by the time I was born, there were other women mbira players who had paved the way for us. Of note is a mbira player called Mbuya Stella Chiweshe. Please look her up and listen to her music. You won't be the same after. She was totally amazing. And one of her main stories was that she started playing bira when it was really, really serious that no women were allowed to play bira. And an uncle of her agreed to start teaching her. And then she became one of the very first women to own a band and to be playing bira. And she was touring. So she just, you know how Lupita says representation matters. Biya Stella Tshiwe showed us what was possible. I can only imagine how much longer it might have taken hadn't women like her paved the way for us. There was also Tshiwoniso Maraire, Mbuya Beulah Joko. Look up their music. Those women were totally amazing. They did the heavy lifting. Some of us, by the time we came, it was a bit easy. There wasn't too much fighting to do. Oh, I don't have a decorated story like, oh, I had this great grandfather. We are sitting. Oh, no. My story, my grandfather, in fact, was a reverend, and the family in which I grew up, as far as I knew all along, was absolutely Christian, and there was no mbira playing or going to mbira ceremonies. For me to put my answer in context, the mbira is a very special and revered instrument here in Zimbabwe and across Africa and many other African countries. However, with colonization came the demonization of mbira. I think the story is the same for the kora and many other African instruments. So here in Zimbabwe, in my family in particular, we were Christian and there was no mbira playing. So I don't have a lovely story like I started playing at 3. No, I only started at 22, I think. Yo, my early 20s were active, defining years in my life.
Dating
Everything, like
Bira.
everything, yo, everything. Like I started in my early 20s. So that's when I started learning mbira. I actually went to a formal school for it. I went to the Zimbabwe College of Music and got a degree in music while learning bira. So
Oh,
my
wow.
story is as conventional as can be.
I don't know if that's conventional. I think that's intentional, right? To like
Oh,
seek out
yeah.
and to seek out this instrument and to perfect it. I think that's intentional and very like you should be getting your flowers for that.
Hallelujah.
When you look at all the things that you're doing, from your poetry to your music, what do you think are the parts of you that you can say have expanded as an African woman because of these things that you're creating?
Oh, well, to start with, when you're a musician, you have the loudspeaker. And every time we're speaking, they give us mics. We are the loudest. So it has given me a voice, that's for sure. And one of the most important things for me is respecting the fact that with the voice comes responsibility. I have to be careful what I sing about, what I write about. But it's such a beautiful space to be in because I am every day I am looking at the life around me and looking at what needs to be addressed in a consumable, easily consumable way. You put it in a song, you put it in a poetry, it's easier to consume. So for me, that's well, there's the music, there's the poetry, and then there's just the leadership in the culture sector also. All of that feeds into my being a mouthpiece for a lot of other women out there, and then other, for lack of a better word, disadvantaged groups or groups that don't necessarily have the mic as often as I have it.
And when you have the mic, are there any moments where, because you're pioneering, so and if we look at even the nuance of being an African woman and seeing something that you want to speak about, have there been moments where that thing, people feel like a woman shouldn't talk about this?
Oh, of course, of course. I mean, the erotic book itself, of course. It's not everyone who openly liked it. Some people thought it was inappropriate, thought it was cheap, viewed it more like pornography, which it most certainly wasn't. So yeah, you don't always get praises. Sometimes also because I'm a cultural advocate, and from what I explained to you before, it means sometimes there are clashes with Christians, and they downright straight up think that what you are talking about or what you are singing about in a song is demonic, is pagan, and you're leading people astray. Even though it is perfectly within our culture, and I'm advocating for who we are or who we were. Yeah, so it's not always praises. I mean, you only need to check people's comments on social media. It's not always the lovely stuff.
I always say, like, if you feel it, the conviction within you to speak up about something or to create something, and you have this belief in it, that's what should fuel you, you know?
Oh, exactly. And what's the point of just talking and everyone agrees with you?
Yeah.
It's like, you know how they say, if there are too many flies on something, be worried. We can't all be agreeable. We are humans. We are all different, and it's perfectly okay not to agree with each other all the time. So if all the time people are agreeing with you, there's a problem.
As we get closer to winding up, Hope, is in this moment right now, what feels most freeing or most delightful about the woman you are becoming?
For me, what feels most beautiful when I wake up in the morning, the thing that puts a smile on my face is, like I said, the gift of time. I am big on gratitude, and even if it means you have to force it, so it means no matter what hardship you're encountering, try to look at the good stuff in that time. I feel like we miss out on so many beautiful things because we are just looking at what's not working out in our lives. So for me, when I wake up and I look at a whole 24 hours, that is just there waiting for me. For me, it's a beautiful thing, and it tells me there are like a million possibilities for me to become the woman, the exact woman that I want, without anyone bringing me down, saying not now, you gotta do this first or anything like that. I have all the time and the energy at my age, the time and the energy to become the woman I want. And for me, that energizes me, that alone.
And to the woman who's listening to this, what is your mannerless message that you want to leave her with?
Two things. All of us here on earth have 24 hours in a day. The difference is how you use your 24 hours, whether you're female or male, whether you're Bill Gates, whether you're the boy who's sitting in the streets, high on whatever. We all have 24 hours. So, woman, if God had a different plan for you, he would have given you less than 24 hours. You have the same time, you have the same energy. Let's grab the bull by the horns. Number two, again, speaking to the same thing, I like saying, asking people when I'm talking to them to bring their thumbs up. The one that we use is, here it's like an okay. We have that as an emoji also. But then what that also symbolizes is this print that only Adele has. No one else on this earth has that same print. What does that mean? It means on this earth, imagine it as a puzzle. It means there's a part, a piece that is only Adele. Even if someone else imitates it, the only person who can fill that space is Adele. So, woman, again, you've got those 24 hours and you've got a calling. Whether you know your talents or not, you've got a calling. Otherwise, your print would just look like anyone else's print. You are special. There is something you are meant to do on this earth. And all of us, our job on this earth is to make each other's lives more beautiful. Just do that. You will be happy and you'll sleep the best dreams.
What an incredible conversation and a powerful mannerless message. I hope it really lands for you. I feel like Hope reminds us that there is no one right way to be an African woman. Your life doesn't have to follow somebody else's timeline for it to be meaningful. And I hope that you connected with this episode. To me, it felt like this much needed hug. I think you should definitely connect with Hope, you know, explore her music, her poetry, her artistic work, learn more about the instrument she plays, the mbira. And what we've done is make sure all of the links to help you do that are in our show notes. So links to help you connect with Hope. And make sure you listen to her beautiful new song. It's called Hey Woy. I hope I'm not butchering the pronunciation. But it's a powerful Shona spiritual call to the ancestral custodians of the land, of the mountains, of the forests, of the rivers, and the sacred spaces. It is beautiful. The video is powerful. We've also linked that in the show notes. And if this episode made you think, if it challenged you or made you feel a little bit more free, make sure you share it with all the manaless or almost manaless women in your life.